Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros,
welcome back to another edition of Leaving the Ring Radio. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gable Montoya, like always. But we got a special guest here with us to pitch off some of the topics we're going to be bringing up here on Leaving the Ring. Angelo from Cheap Seats Boxing is joining us out of Texas. It should be really fun, man. Hey, thanks for coming on, bro. I really appreciate you taking the time and coming on our podcast. I listen to your podcast. I got a few of my folks listening to your podcast. Really good show. I enjoy it. And I thought, hey, you know, let's bring him onto our show, and let's see what kind of spark we could start over here with you on.
Nah, I appreciate it, man. I appreciate you having me on and inviting me. Let's just have some fun, man. That's what I like to do. So let's just have fun with it, man.
Absolutely. You know, some big news here in boxing. I think I got Gabriel. Gabriel, you there, brother? You should be. Should be on with me right now.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you good. Big news, right? The big news right now in boxing is Golden Boy, Oscar De La Hoya, and the whole staff had it hidden and tucked away in wraps the announcement of Amir King Kong versus Saul Canelo Alvarez for the middleweight title. And we saw kind of a divided community of people. Either they loved it or they just completely hated it. They thought that this was just a crappy deal. It shouldn't happen. What did Amir Khan do to get in the position of getting the middleweight title challenge? Why isn't Canelo going after the legitimate middleweights that linger in that division? So many questions. So many scenarios. I'm gonna tap into what you think really quick, Gabriel, because I haven't heard your thoughts about this yet, because it was such an early announcement. What do you think? Is it a crappy fight? Is it something worth that should be on pay-per-view? Is it going to be a little bit better than what people are either anticipating or bashing on? I mean, what do you think we got here cooking up between a guy that really hasn't proven to be a welterweight to a guy that hasn't really proven to be a middleweight?
Well, that's the thing, you know. I mean, Canelo's always been a champion in training, but on the job training, going back to his first belt, you know, with Matthew Hatton, well, there was a catch weight for that. It was a junior middleweight belt. Capturing it made him the youngest junior middleweight champion ever, breaking Fernando Vargas's record.
Right.
But he did it at a catch weight of 150 and then didn't make weight, but still won the belt because he was under the limit. You know, and now we have, he's inherited this 155 catch weight title from, or, you know, not inherited, but taken it from Cotto. But it's a situation he somewhat inherited. I mean, let's be frank, the 155 to 160 is the division. It isn't, you've got to weigh 160. I mean, is it fair to make other guys not weigh the full limit? Probably, if they're career 160s. But Amir Khan is not that. I mean, catch weights are made for situations like this, right? A welterweight challenging the middleweight titleist when there wasn't even a 54 division. That wasn't, you know, it didn't happen all the time, but it's not unprecedented. So you look at the styles of the fight, the size of the two guys. I don't trust BoxRec's measurements. I think Khan
right.
is actually shorter
yeah.
than the 5'8.5" they give him. And, you know, I think Canelo is probably accurate, about 5'9", 5'10". But Khan's the taller guy. I think he's got a nice long reach, wide back on him. I thought for years he needed to put weight on and move on up. It's never going to improve his punch, but I think he's got enough speed to survive at that set, at that weight, and he's got enough boxing skills in order to extend a fight and potentially pull this off. I don't think it's a shitty fight by any means.
What about this here? I mean, when you talk about weight and legs, Amir Khan's upper body is obviously is very wide. His legs are really scrawny. That's what made me wonder. You know, where do you pack in? Where do you pack in the weight to kind of get up to that up limit? Where, in terms of Canelo, his legs have always been really, really big, you know. And we said that the reason he has problems making weight is because he can't lose the weight on his legs. Angelo, how does Amir Khan move up in weight properly? Well, you obviously, the obvious is he needs to gain it in his legs, not his upper body anymore.
Well, I think that's the biggest key for Khan is how is he going to put on the weight. And, I mean, we've seen pictures of him, you know, since he's been so inactive. There were times when, you know, it looked like he could carry that weight, but it wasn't in the right way. So, just the whole thing is, I don't know, man. With Khan, even if you think, like, you know, he's going to have moments because of his speed and everything else, but weight isn't really going to have anything to do with this. It's really going to be, you know, his chin, his punch resistance, which he doesn't have very much of. You know, maybe the weight, putting on extra weight will make him stronger, but, I mean, he's barely moving up to 147. It's just such a huge jump for him. I mean, he didn't even handle the limited power of Chris Algieri very well, so I really don't know if the weight, you know, and putting it in his legs is one thing, but I mean, the one thing that he's got over Canelo is the speed, and he's going to need some movement in the ring, even though he's a guy who just pulls straight back, you know, when he's trying to dodge punches. But
putting it in his leg is nearly unrealistic or near impossible for a short period of time. I mean, anybody wanting to gain weight in their legs, you know that it takes a series of years to do that properly. You know, I wonder with even thinking of trying to add some more muscle onto your body, how fair does it help you in terms of losing what you have been labeled as already as a speed, so a kid that does have speed. The factor of that, of adding muscle, we've seen this happen time and time again, Gabriel, where you see a guy add muscle, it restricts them to being more flexible, it restricts their speed, and it almost makes them look a bit mechanical. So how does a guy realistically move up in weight and still obtain that speed when you're not having the proper amount of time? Is there enough time, Gary, you think, right now? And, you know, me and you are both in and out of the gyms and checking out guys, and you're over there in San Francisco, and you have a better chance of watching guys that are doing different methods of getting their bodies prepared. Is 3 months a good amount of time of gaining the proper weight to move up to be effective? I just can't see that happening right now.
Well, I'm transforming his body for quite a while. He's one of the few guys, you know, I know there's that picture of him out there in shorts, and people are claiming that's him being fat, him walking with his wife. He actually doesn't look that bad. And I imagine the guys who criticize his shape look nothing close to where he's at. He's been working with, you know, Tony Brady for years up here, with who's Virgil Hunter's strength guy. I'm not sure if he still is. There was a period where he was working with Victor Conte, and more importantly, to your point about his legs, working with Remy Corcemi, the sprint coach. And I know Tony likes that sprint philosophy, likes resistance work, does all his own program as well. I think they're into powerlifting a little bit. So I think that he's around smart people who know how to get in shape, know how to put the weight on. I mean, here's the thing. The limit is 155. His last few fights, when he went to 47, he went all the way to 47. His last one was 146.5. But that's a guy that's comfortably making the weight, but also needs to push all the way up. They're very smart about what they're doing with his body, and I don't expect them to slow down too much. I don't think, you know, if they were putting on weight, it would kind of try to be to muscle with Canelo and also be strong. And I don't think that's his strength. I think that Khan knows speed's going to kill in this fight. I expect him not to be at 155 when he weighs in, somewhere like more like 153.
I think that's a smart move.
Maybe
I think that's the smartest game plan
on fight night.
Right. I think that's the game plan that you should try to follow and be in, because you want to be the smaller, faster guy. But like Angelo mentioned a little earlier, the question I think most fight fans are having right now is the chin resistance. Can he handle a guy like Canelo Alvarez, who's going to come in at 170, almost as a light heavyweight, and take that kind of a punch, if he can't take a Chris Algieri punch? Because some folks seem to believe that Amir gets knocked out once you land a big heavy shot. I argue with a few folks on Twitter, Facebook, and even on the phone about the fact that if you go back and look at the fights, it's an accumulation of punches that land. Before you even answer that, Gable, let's go back with Angelo. Do you truly believe that a Canelo Alvarez, who showed that he doesn't have that killer instinct, in my opinion. He just doesn't go after the kill. He can have a hurt and wounded animal, but for some reason, he kind of tends to stay back and just watch it. You know, he's kind of content watching his prey slowly die on its own. He won't go for that end kill. What happens if he does hurt Amir Khan? What happens that he has him at that right moment and right time where he should go for that kill, but he backs off and he allows a young, fast Amir Khan back into the fight where there's a strong possibility he gets that second wind? What happens then if he can't take him out with that one punch?
Well, I've always said that Khan's chin is, even though, he has gotten knocked out pretty much with, you know, just one or two punches. But if you go back, like Gable said, or one of you guys said, he has fought some punches. I mean, he lasted the full distance with Maidana, so he can take some punches. I think also the fact that when you go in there and expecting to get hit harder than you've ever gotten hit, it really does help. I think if you're anticipating to get hit with big shots, and with Canelo, if he doesn't go in for the kill and lets Khan get a second win or a second chance, you know, that's only going to build the confidence of Khan. And Khan is a front runner. And, you know, if he's feeling good about himself and he was to weather a storm, I mean, you would have to like his chances of at least making some tense moments in the fight for Canelo. But, you know, we've also seen Canelo go in for the kill against James Kirkland and even against Alfredo Angulo. So, you know, as much as we think we know these guys, sometimes they do the exact opposite of what we think, and sometimes Khan's chin has held up, and then sometimes, you know, Canelo sits back, and then sometimes he goes in for the kill. So, you know, I really don't know what to expect from the fight.
Well, you know, I look at that Algieri fight. People really, you know, hang their hat on that. You know, he got rocked. But, I mean, and even the Madonna, I mean, he dominated that fight. Back end, but he still finished, and it could happen to anybody. And I don't think Khan gets enough credit for his poise, his ability to deal with situations like that. I mean, the Garcia fight, he got caught in between punches by a guy whose best punches is left hook. Could happen to just about anybody. And I rate Danny Garcia much higher than most people do. I mean, I don't think he's pound for pound number one, but I don't do lists like that. But I don't think I think people downgrade him because they don't like him and his dad. They don't really look at his fights. But the Algieri fight is interesting just because you look at the other two welterweight fights of Mir, and he goes to 47 limit to weigh in. For that fight, he weighs in 146.5. And if you see the end of the fight, and the fight didn't go, you know, it was tougher than they expected. He got rocked by Algieri, still wins, but Shah Khan is screaming at Virgil Hunter after that fight, "You overtrained my son," all over him. And what I understand is, and I've watched this with Virgil with other fighters, is he wants to know everything. He wants to be the guy in charge of the whole kit and caboodle. And
right,
even if that means that the experts that are in there that are working with his athlete get contradicted. And it's not a matter of just philosophy and words, but actually physically changing protocols and you know, because you're really tapering to peak on that night. I witnessed it with Angulo, and I witnessed, you know, I've heard that it was the case for the Mir Khan fight with Algieri. So, you know, overtraining, that's, you know, it's going to dehydrate you. It's going to make you look flat. You're going to get caught with shots that maybe you shouldn't. I mean, Khan's been knocked out before. I'm not saying, you know, making a case he has a strong chin. But I look at that fight as perhaps an anomaly. But, you know, Canelo's just not that good. I've never really been on that bandwagon. And the Angulo fights, Kirkland fights, people point to as him being a knockout artist, were shells of those two fighters. You know, Kirkland had been off for a long time. It was already considered to be chinny, although, you know, I mean, he'd been stopped by Ishida, dropped by Alan Conyers. I don't consider him terribly chinny. He'd been down before, I think, once he's had a breakneck style, but he wasn't even with Ann Wolf for that fight. So when people keep pointing to that, like that was a shell of James Kirkland. And Angulo was also already pretty beat up when Canelo got him. I think if Canelo can't hurt Khan, if his power is as overrated as I think it is, he's going to have some problems because I don't think he's as fast a foot as Khan. He's, if I had to say he had one really big, besides size being natural to the 155 weight division, Canelo has patience and relaxation over Amir Khan. He doesn't fight tense. He doesn't burn energy that he doesn't need to the way Amir Khan
is. He's very conservative,
strong.
Yeah.
Very conservative. And that could play against him in this fight, or, you know, if he's getting enough body work done and slowing Amir down and getting to him, that could really work towards him getting a late finish.
You know, here's my thing. It is an intriguing fight. And this is my thing with Canelo is that if you'll watch when his knockouts have come, it's against guys that come forward where he doesn't have to do too much of searching for you. He just has to let his hands go, and it's worked for him. It's the guys that tend to don't come straight at him. Now, my other thing is this, that is Miguel Cotto is a smaller guy, in my opinion, from Amir Khan. And what Canelo showed with me with Cotto was that he just didn't have that extra oomph of taking the next level of stepping on the pedal of getting a guy out. That tells me that if he can't get Amir hurt, if he can get Amir hurt, is he going to finish the job or is he going to be told by his corner, hey, lay down, you're taking too many risks? That's going to be the big question here. The other big question is, why was this fight even made? I think that's one of the big things that where fight fans are kind of confused and wondering, why did this fight even come up? Why was this even brought up? Why did they even agree for either one of the camps to make this happen and stuff? Angelo, I don't know if you got an opinion about that. I'll let you shoot first at it.
I would say that the reason, I guess, that the fight was made, I guess Khan has been trying to make a pitch that somehow he's a pay-per-view worthy fighter. And since there was the options were so limited, I think that this gives him a name that he can throw on pay-per-view and I guess kind of legitimize it. But I mean, as much as the fight could be intriguing, I mean, the fight is kind of BS. I mean, he hasn't even fully fought at 160 and he wants to fight a welterweight. And just, you know, the one thing that people do give Canelo credit for is that he'll fight anybody, but that doesn't mean you just fight anybody. You know, there needs to be
anybody with
thought,
a term, though. He's
yeah,
proven
exactly,
that. Anybody with a term, you know? Yeah,
exactly. It's like you don't just fight just anybody. I mean, you know, the name is, you know, people will kind of know the name Amir Khan. I don't think it's going to bring in too many casual fans, but people know Amir Khan. And so, you know, because people were saying, even with this fight, you know, Canelo's going to probably be a pay-per-view guy, but it's really going to be hard to sell a pay-per-view when you don't have a name on the other side. And I think that's all it did, was it just filled the need for a name. And I can tell you right now, if this fight isn't followed up with a Triple G fight, I think even though he's not beloved by all Mexican fans, I think the ones who do love him are going to drop off considerably, and they're all going to go to the Triple G side.
Well, just recently, right now, you heard about the Waldo and Reed and the troubles that are happening with the Al Haymon world and PBC. I think it has to take into consideration here, Gabriel. We have to look at the overall of why certain things happened. You know, I've spoken to a few people, and one thing is for sure is that the budget that was originally given has been in the past, in the beginning, when this was steamrolling, in terms of getting fight dates and networks to buy into the proposed plan of how to get back boxing on the mainstream, had a lot of money involved. There was fighters that were getting paid a large amount of money that had never seen that type of amount of money, because in the fact of the real world and boxing, the way it was functioned, there was a certain prize limit of money being spent to them. And that was actually, you know, over did by Al Heyman, and that's why there's such love between the managers and promoters and fighters that work with him. But now I'm being told that normal fight cards that were being promoted by smaller venues, they're getting in now a shortcut budget. Their things are being cut in half. Something that normally would cost $3,000 to $5,000, they're cutting that completely in half. Do you think it's safe to say that there's maybe some trouble in the Al Heyman world in terms of allowing Khan to venture on his own? Because here's somebody that would want to play with other promoters. You know, he was willing, he said, hey, I'm willing to do things with other promoters, but there was really never an initiative of him really kind of tugging at that. It was said, but it was never done. With Amir Khan, even going with negotiations with Manny Pacquiao, right? And this was reported and said that he was doing the negotiations. It was never Al Heyman was reaching out, but it was him. Do you think in some way this was Al Heyman's way of saying, Amir, go do what you got to do so that I can get you out of my hair, because I definitely can't afford to pay you what you're looking for and what you're asking for right at this moment? Because here's the thing, too, and here's my thought. The tournament was just announced by the WBC. The tournament was pushed with Robert Guerrero versus Danny Garcia. Here's the guy that was supposed to get the winner of that fight. Now, I don't know. I can't remember exactly the dollar amount that he had for Chris Algieria, but I'm pretty sure that Al Heyman can pay him whatever he's going to be getting paid with Canelo at the moment. Because I don't see Amir Khan getting a for sure $5 million deal facing Canelo Alvarez. I think he gets the much smaller purse, which would be like a $2.5 million. But if Al Heyman is the man, why wouldn't he be able to pay him that to face a rematch in Danny Garcia?
Well, I think there's a lot of chess playing going on. And my take is that Oscar is much smarter, much more shrewd, learned a lot more from Bob Arum than people really realize, and I think even more than he realized. Him getting sober is still one of the – it's a great X factor in everything that was planned by – or allegedly planned by Richard Schaefer and Al Heyman. They had the Trojan Horse Company within Golden Boy Promotions. Oscar woke up. And he's making some serious moves. He's one of the few promoters that's just making fights and actually bridging gaps in order to do that, as this fight shows. According to several reports, and Eric Gomez said this, and Steve Evans, he's the matchmaker for Golden Boy, and was, you know, intrinsic in making the fight. He said that Al had nothing to do with this. They dealt with Shah Khan and Shah's lawyer, Shah being Amir's dad.
And his lawyer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and his lawyer, a separate guy, not the same guy, and then they put the fight together. So, to me, Amir is an interesting piece. One, it removes him from the WBC tournament, and Danny was already. It seemed that he may have been looking at other options, or thought Khan maybe needed a fight in between. He was already hemming and hawing, and I think when you look around, I mean, Khan is, like everybody says, he's always the bridesmaid. There didn't seem to be any room at the Heyman PBC table for Khan. You know, post-Algieri, he's just been sitting there. And if you look at it, you know, he was going to fight Alexander for a belt. He was advised by somebody, he never said who, I'm assuming it was Richard Schaefer or it was Al, to not take that fight, you might get Floyd. Then he didn't get Floyd. Then Floyd was dangled again, didn't get Floyd for the final fight. Tries to get Pacquiao, can't get Pacquiao. I think Golden Boy was sitting there watching, especially when Al deployed his plan of the tournament, you know, with Suleiman and Amir's plans in it to kind of throw, you know, a monkey wrench into the works. And pulling Khan over is great for Golden Boy, kind of takes one of the players out of Heyman's off of his chessboard, puts it on theirs, causes a further rift because they're giving Khan what he's been asking for and Al hasn't delivered, which is a pay-per-view fight. That's what he believes he is. On Khan's side, it makes a lot of sense because he wants to be a pay-per-view fighter. He believes that's who he is. He picked probably the bigger guys. You know, he could have gone Triple G. He could have gone Canelo. He picked the slower guy that doesn't hit it that hard compared to Triple G, that he could probably outsmart. He thinks he's got a shot at. But also, that's got a pay-per-view history. Fighting this guy immediately puts him in that stratosphere, the way Tim Bradley, it was all of a sudden in that pay-per-view stratosphere by fighting Manny Pacquiao. He couldn't accomplish that with Danny Garcia. He really couldn't accomplish that with Kell Brook either. This fight made the most sense for Khan. He waited a long time, but it was very shrewd on both sides.
Great move by him, absolutely, and stuff. And it goes back to the question that the reports right now that he's seeing this type of move right here, Angelo, do you think that, because I tell you what, really is in hurt. They're the ones that in the hurt business right now, there's a strong possibility they were going to fall out in a non company. But power moves. They're starting their own digital network, you know, showing fights on a digital platform. To me, it shows that I'm not sure if they're really the wounded animal. They're me now, PBC, by showing that they're willing now by allowing, and what I'm being told because of agent to work with them and help build their superstar tells me there's a lot of trouble in how what people will.
Angelo,
welcome to
Leave It in the Ring, Leave It in the Ring family, where sometimes
I think
you can't understand what the other guy's saying.
Okay, I think Gabe understands what I was going through there, then okay.
No, that's what I was saying. Especially for the host, because the host could actually never tell when their sound is getting screwed up. It's happened to me 2 weeks in a row on the next round. But I think what I did catch in what Dave said is that Golden Boy isn't the wounded animal that everybody thought they were. I mean, Oscar's been coming out firing both fists, making big fights. You know, I don't know. I mean, I know, Dave, you had mentioned the theory about them kind of filling the war chest with this. They need a big fight like this. I tend to agree with you, but I don't think Oscar's at a point where he's looking for money. You know, like he's running out of money or anything. Because ultimately,
well, exactly. When we talked earlier, that's where my mindset was at. But you know, speaking to other people and speaking to somebody that has a little bit more insight, and he was telling me some numbers that are actually being dished out there, some things that are actually happening in terms of the promotional smaller groups where their budget is being cut. That goes to the question. Okay, because if they weren't hurting, if there was no money financial problems, okay, and they weren't cutting budget, no way in hell would they allow Amir Khan to go and help out another promotional group to help them build a star. Why would he do that? If he could, if he had the money to match whatever offer Golden Boy's giving him, don't you think that money would have kept Amir Khan there? Or is Amir Khan so much in love with wanting to be a pay-per-view fighter that he would just kind of derail from the plan of Al Haymon?
If you're looking at defeated, nobody's been looking out for him. You know, he didn't get those big fights.
True.
He was promised those big fights. They lured him over and were like, dude, everybody's going to be on free TV. You're going to make so much cash. That really hasn't been the case for him. And you know, he hasn't really gotten the star treatment. I think he's realizing, this has always been the battle. PBC is offering kind of a new model, and Amir left Golden Boy, which still believes in the old model. And so you're seeing the first guy kind of return back and go, you know, I kind of like the old ways, where you're just building up one guy into a pay-per-view star, and if you beat that guy, then you can possibly be that guy. You know, I think that's what we're seeing a little bit.
I think so too, man. Angelo, you want to put any input on this, brother? Add to it.
Yeah, I think this is the first chip to fall. But I'm kind of curious. I know Al Haymon didn't have anything to do with it, but is Amir Khan definitely gone from Al Haymon? Is that what's going on with this?
What I understood from the articles was that Amir is still with him, and that even on his end, he was being, according to a PBC person who did not want to be named, I'm going to take a wild guess and say it was Tim Smith. They said that, you know, the Khan's people were calling Al and being advised by him. the whole time. But I'm wondering if Al will even be credentialed. I mean, there's a lawsuit going on there, so I don't know.
Well, that was the other part that I was thinking about, because Heyman kind of did this with Duva when she had her lawsuit against him, you know, when they worked together and somehow the lawsuit got dropped and everything. I just wondered if he's trying to work some kind of an angle.
No, they're
reaching
was,
out to Golden Boy. I mean,
he might be, but I mean, Oscar said in the Times today that this doesn't mean we're going to have co-promotions in the future of any kind.
Right.
I don't think they're considering this a co-promotion, because Al's not a. This is the thing. I mean, you know, if Al's involved, yeah, as an advisor, but he's not. He doesn't have a promoter in this game, because Khan's not tied to a promoter. In fact, Steve's article seemed to suggest that Khan may be signing with Golden Boy and returning to them promotionally, which might, you know, be interesting. It'd be the first U.S. guy that, well, I won't say that. I need to research it. But for a long time, Al's had guys that aren't with any promoter on paper. They just work with certain promoters on a fight-to-fight basis. Khan might be one of the first guys, if he signs, if not the only guy, that's advised by Al and signed to Golden Boy, signed to anybody.
I think too, that Khan has, if I remember correctly, Khan has all the rights to pay-per-views in the UK. And I think that might have swayed him as well to go with Canelo, because the guaranteed purse is much higher. I mean, one of our UK followers is pointing out, you know, he's guaranteed a much larger sum. And I think they're right, because of the fact that he has the rights to whatever is televised over there. So it's a great move that he made. It's not a great move in terms of the weight of limit and where it's going to be fought at. But I think people forget, too, that there's been a lot. You know, some folks are kind of making it sound like this is the first time in history for the last couple of years. All we see is, you know, catch weights. This has been happening for a couple hundred years already. You know, we used to have middleweights back in the early 1900s challenge for the heavyweight title. I mean, granted, they were heavyweights weren't as big as that we're genetically seeing now, but they were challenging and they would win and stuff. So it's one of those things where my opinion is it's a good matchup. I'm not too fond of what's on stake. The middleweight title, because I'm a Marvelous Marvin Hagler guy. And to me, it just really shits on what he accomplished and what he did. You know, a workman class guy that had a fight to be a world champion, that had a fight to make you recognize he was a world champion. Where nowadays, we see more or less guys that are Sugar Ray Leonard. We talked about this, Gable, earlier today. More guys less than Sugar Ray Leonard that are kind of given that spot, that loom light of already being this grand champion and not having obstacles to jump to get in that position that is deserved. I don't really see that. Excuse me. I don't really see that anymore. It's really hard to see that, and it's really hard to see blue collar fighters in this sport. It's been watered down a whole lot.
You know, I wanted to touch up on when you guys are talking about the catch weights. We know that the catch weights have been happening forever, and there's a reason for catch weights, and this fight would actually, for once, actually dictate that a catch weight should be used. I think the biggest problem people have is not that there's catch weights when it comes to a guy coming up and a guy who's heavier than him, and they're meeting somewhere in the middle. I think it's once the guy wins the title at a certain weight class that he continues to defend titles at a catch weight. You know, like when Manny Pacquiao went up and he won the junior middleweight title from was it Margarito? You know, he didn't defend it again. You know, he didn't sit there and say, "Well, I'm just going to hold a hostage at 150 pounds." And I think that's the thing that really gets people. It's not the fact that catch weights are made. It's the fact that people use the catch weights as crutches and as a way to hold on to a title. It's one thing to win the title at a catch weight, but if you're going to defend that title, I think most people expect that you defend it at the limit, or at least. And the whole thing is, look, like with what Cotto was doing with it. Heck, even Sergio Martinez did the catch weights with the middleweight title, and what Canelo's doing. Like, if you want to weigh 155, go ahead, but let your opponent come in at the limit. You know, I think it gains a lot more respect in that way. These guys are just using it as a crutch to hold on to the titles, and I think that's where people have had such a problem with it and using it to an advantage instead of trying to actually meet somewhere in the middle and to find a middle ground with a fight. That's my whole thing with them.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, sometimes it bothers me with this 155. I just, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old and I just kind of like, well, people aren't going to change. They're going to keep doing this. Canelo was a product of Oscar, who was a product of Bob Arum, who understands that you just try to get every advantage you can. They're not the only guys using it, you know, but they're, you know, I think this 55 is like I said to you today, Dave, you know, is, it's the way like Paul Williams, when he made Sergio Martinez come in at 158,
right?
You know, for the middleweight catchweight title of the world. And, you know, and Martinez was the freaking champion, but Williams' people, this was Al Haymon, they wanted to keep it open so that he could move, you know, keep saying he could go to 54 or 47 and get a big fight with a Floyd or a Pacquiao. That's what he was hunting for. So, you know, I think this is just the same thing, that Canelo is keeping his options open. He could drop the belt, he could keep the belt. He's a linear guy. So even if you strip the belt, you can't strip a lineal title. He could market himself that way. He's got options. And he could still do it. So, you know, and I just think it's, if this is a successful pay-per-view, if they do it right, it should be. I mean, it won't break records, but it should be respectable. Again, you know, when he comes around to mandatory with Triple G, and, you know, they're already, you know, making proclamations about what the weight's going to be. WBC's putting pressure on him. He's got the financial backing to just say, no, this is what I want. And if you don't like it, then you're not going to get any money from me, and I'll drop your belt. You know, I'm not crazy about it. Like I said, I prefer traditional weight classes, and I prefer doing things straight up. If you're the guy, then be the guy, you know. But I also understand the logic to it.
Fight fans, you want to call in, you certainly can. 347-215-7598. We're going to open up the phone lines in a short bit here. We're going to move on. Let's talk a little bit about what happened this past weekend. Sergey Kovalev in the rematch with Sean Pascal. We saw a domination, a rematch. Really, a lot of folks didn't think needed to happen because of the first fight, first time around. You know the thing about with Pascal, man, and I was talking to a few folks about this. They were asking me what did I think, and I even put it on Twitter. Pascal, to me, looked worse with Freddie Roach. Not saying that Freddie Roach did anything, but I think what Freddie was trying to do was trying to tame a guy that was naturally awkward and try to put fundamentals in a guy that already was almost I think was already there over the hill. And being that said, that whatever he was trying to show him, it didn't show up in the ring because he couldn't use those tools because his body couldn't respond at all. What I like what Kovalev did was he didn't, he still kind of fought at a cautious state, but he used his fundamentals to just take advantage of the awkwardness that Pascal still had, because he didn't know whether or not it was a shallow Pascal, but he definitely knew that the power and that speed was still there. It still was relevant, you know, and he did land. Pascal was able to land that nice little looping left hand and right hand here and there. And what I'm looking at with Kovalev is a guy that doesn't have the things that make everybody go awe. You know, he doesn't have those special effects. But the 1-2-3 that he does pose, he has it with angles. He sets it up so beautifully. You know, he's just not a straight in forward guy. He looks for the pockets and he creates the pockets. And I think that's what's impressive with him. There's still going to be criticism of him. We're still wanting to see what more does he have to offer in the landscape of his skills. But at the moment of what I witnessed from him, I like what I see. And I'd like to see what is up next for him, Gabriel. I don't know what your thoughts about what happened Saturday night, guys. Like to hear it. But that's what I got off from Sergey Kovalev. It's a guy that showed that he's willing to improve and willing to have different angles and knew that he had a hurt guy, but still was kind of showing you that he can do things what a good balance of boxing?
Angela, you want to go first?
Yeah, go ahead, Gabe.
I thought it was a calculated destruction. I mean, a lot of fight fans got really upset that not all of them, but some of them, the more sensitive boxing writers out there, that Kovalev maybe kept him around or admitted that he wanted to punish him. He wanted to give him, more pain. If somebody calls you a racist for a couple months or, over two fight camps, accuses you of all kinds of stuff, I imagine it would be personal. I think spending any amount of time with John Pascal would be annoying. And just speaking from experience dealing with him, he's just kind of a dick and kind of aggressive. And
right.
So Kovalev broke him down. I think he is, like you said, he is underrated in that he's got that great jab. He's got nice movement and feet. But, it's hard to say a guy's great at the same time that you're saying the other guy's kind of shot. Pascal's been beaten before. He had some moments in the first fight, but we were rewatching it, prepping for the next round and for this show, predicting the fight. I didn't see why this fight needed to happen, other than it was contractually obligated. There was a rematch clause in the first contract, and there was money to be made, and TV would accept it. But I saw no way that John Pascal was going to win, even if he decided to box. And you're right. I mean, I think all Freddie did with him was make him pause a little bit. And I think anybody would have probably made him pause a little bit because you're rethinking things. It takes 3 or 4 fights to really gel with the trainer if you're even going to. So for them to expect that this is going to be an all-new guy, how many times have we heard that storyline?
Right.
I want to see Kovalev fight on the inside, lean on a guy and really, work like that in close. He's best at mid to long range, and I imagine that if Andre Ward faces him, he's going to want to take it straight inside because that's where his strength is, and I think that's where he can win in that fight.
Yeah,
what are your thoughts, Enzo?
Mm-hmm. For me, with Kovalev's performance, I think the fact that he used the jab more, it really, to me, was all about he just wanted to punish Pascal. That's all it was about. If you go back to the first fight, and I've thought this a lot, that even though Pascal did have moments, I think that a lot of times when his reaction was to fight and to stand there and trade, I think it happened all after he got knocked through the ropes in the third round, and he had that glazed look that Tim Bradley had against Ruslan Provodnikov, and I think he was concussed in that fight, and I think he just went into instinctive mode of fighting back and survival mode and doing what he had to do. And I think that this time Kovalev didn't do that. He used the jab and he pulled punches. He did just enough to let him know that I'm going to beat you down in a slow, sadistic way. And he never hurt Pascal to that point to where it kicked those instincts in again. Because if you look the first couple rounds, in the first fight, Pascal wasn't doing those things, where he's having his moments, like in the, I think it was like the fifth, sixth round or
right.
In the first fight. And I really think that he literally was concussed into a firefight. And this time, Kovalev didn't give him the chance to do that and just slowly, surely broke him down. And, Kovalev doesn't get the credit for being the boxer that he is. He's a much better boxer than what people give him credit for. He's not the greatest boxer ever, but he can hurt you with pretty much every punch, and I think he's skilled enough, and he controls distance enough that he can do what he wants. And Gabe was saying, getting on the inside of Ward. I think sometimes controlling the distance with Ward is really going to help you because you get in too close with Ward, Ward's going to just hit you and grab you. And Kovalev didn't allow Bernard Hopkins to do that, and I think he's going to try to implement that same kind of strategy. Control the distance and take his shots when he has it. As much as people give Andre Ward a hard time, it's still looking at it from here. Even though I give a slight edge to Kovalev at this time, it's still close to a 50-50 fight.
Yeah, we're definitely going to get into talking a little bit about that and point out some pointers of what both guys possess. The thing with Kovalev, what I like is the whole scenario of calling him a racist and the build up to that with Pascal getting underneath his skin. But the thing that I like that Kovalev showed in the poise that he brought into the ring on that fight night was the controlled cruelty that he had. I think that's something that we have to point out, because he didn't allow his emotions to overwhelm him fight night at all, Gabriel, right? I mean, he controlled that cruelty that he wanted to do to Pascal. And that, to me, shows me a very determined, focused fighter there. And when you have that, when you have that already set in you, that makes you a far even more dangerous guy, because there's no panic there. And then you're able not to derail from your game plan. You're able to stick with it, and you're able to apply it. And that becomes something even a much more added to your arsenal, because the fact that you're not allowing the emotions to completely take over at all. I like what I saw from him by doing that. He didn't get wild. He didn't overcommit on certain things. He stayed poised, and he allowed the openings to set themselves up for him to capitalize on.
No, I think that's dead on. It's kind of funny. It's like the worry heading into the week was that everything that Pascal was doing was going to make Kovalev angry. And, you know, like Steve was saying, you know, let sleeping dogs lie. Don't wake him up. But instead, I think you guys are spot on. It made him cold. And instead he was like, no, I'm going to extend this. I'm going to just slowly beat you down. I'm going to take my time, and it's all good. You know, I want to see him in against somebody that is a little more prime, that other people haven't beaten, that's a little bit of a threat. And I guess that's Andre Ward. That's where we're headed. Stevenson is not younger, but is a dangerous guy. I think Kovalev wins that fight, but it's a dangerous fight. I think Ward is probably more dangerous because he's the kind of guy that nullifies things that you do. And you know, it could end up being, although he's not a bigger man the way Hopkins was versus Trinidad, but it could be that kind of fight where all of a sudden an offensive fighter has his offense taken away and has to figure out other things to do. And I wonder with Kovalev, is he able to do all those other things? He does work on the inside, but again, that's against overmatched opposition. I want to see him do it against somebody that's right there with him, you know?
Well, we saw Andre Ward there on ringside on fight night, and he did get in there and, you know, kind of gave an interview that it was not so intriguing and not so enticing. But let's lay out what they both bring. I mean, Andre Ward's pedigree as an amateur, it's a standout. He's a gold medalist. Kovalev has a standout amateur as well. Both guys have good jabs. Both guys jab to the body. Both guys have showed that if you do tie them up with the free hand, they're going to work. They're not going to sit there and just wait for the ref to separate you. They both try to make something happen for themselves. One guy poses ring intelligence with not that much pop, but he can use his feet to get in and out, and that's Ward. Kovalev shows ring intelligence, but with a cruelty behind it, where he looks for the KO, and he looks to set it up. He's not a lazy worker. If we all think about blue-collar fighters, he's definitely one of the few that is a blue-collar guy that works and chips away until he gets his guy to just fall over. I like both of them, but the problem that I see right now is the fact that Andre Ward, I hate to say this, even though, he is the guy that should be up next in terms of answering questions of where Kovalev really is at as this warrior and this killer machine. Can he get in there and fight a guy that is not wear and tear, that is very well oiled, and is kind of a machine in terms of work ethic? Can he do that? But the thing is that Andre Ward, to me, only brings an undefeated record. He doesn't bring a population of people wanting to sit down and watch him fight. He's not very liked in the community of fight fans. Why would Kovalev even risk it? And on that night, when we saw that the interview, Stevenson was in the ring. Anadonis Stevenson was in the ring, and Kovalev started making the chicken sounds and called him Chickenson. I saw the spark in his eyes here, Angelo. I saw a guy that had more interest in unifying and fighting a guy that's been avoiding him for some time. With Andre Ward, it was more or less like, if that's what you're going to give me, then I'm going to take it. But the real main course for me is a guy that's more of a blown up Pascal, which would be Stevenson.
Yeah, I think what you saw in Kovalev's eyes was the hatred that he has for Stevenson, just like he has
right.
for Pascal. And the one thing that we said on our show was sometimes you got to be careful on who you say certain things to, because you never know who you're talking to and how people react. And the fact that it seemed like all the talk of the racism thing and whatever, even if he was, I said that Pascal better hope to God that he's not a racist, because if that's the case, he's going to really kill him. But with Stevenson, it's the same thing. He hates Adonis Stevenson. And so I think that's what you saw. I think with Andre Ward, what he sees is a name. He sees as a guy who people say he can beat you. And I don't think Kovalev is afraid of anybody. I think he's willing to take any risk.
What's the bigger reward, though, guys? I mean, let's think about this here. You get a guy that's undefeated, is a gold medalist. And at one time, Tito Trinidad was after all the gold medalists. And he took pride in stopping and knocking out or beating guys that had a gold medal, because it meant something of more value to the fighter. But here you see Kovalev seeing the reward of unifying the title, but in the seat of a fight fan, which one is more grand rewarding? Which one's more of the grand reward? Beating Ward or beating Stevenson here, Gable? What do you think? I tend to think it's Ward. Money-wise.
I think it's Ward. Money-wise, it's probably Stevenson. And it's also, there's something magic about and electric about a personal fight, when you know the guys just don't like each other and they really want to hurt each other. That's much more intriguing. And I think fight fans, I mean, it's just a notch above on some level. But Andre's a more accomplished guy, granted at a different weight. But he's considered to be the all-around boxer. He's the boogeyman, apparently, for Triple G, although you don't hear a lot of those same people saying that he'll easily beat Triple G, want him to face Kovalev right away. You need him to get some tune-up. So, but I think it's Ward. You know, I just think he's considered to be a much more of a puzzle defensively than Stevenson, who has shown vulnerability against lesser fighters, or supposed lesser fighters.
I mean, let's be honest here. Ward should be the super fight. If you look at the term super fight, you got two guys in their prime, two guys that are very accomplished in terms of what's been happening in their career. But the fact of the matter is Ward has tarnished his legacy by far by being his own publicist and manager. I mean, would we be looking at this at a different way if Ward would have allowed the right guys to push his career here, man? I mean, to me, Ward just seemed every time he had the chance to elevate his career, it would stop because of the way he was, because the fact that he needed to have control in the sense of the way Floyd Mayweather is. You know, he has to have the right words, and you cannot ask him a question without him having control of the interview or what's going to be put on paper and management in terms of the promotional deal in the fight. Anybody can jump in on your guys' thoughts on that.
I think Ward's biggest problem is just nobody cares about him, and he's been so inactive. All he's done is accentuate the fact that nobody, even the few people in Oakland who did care about him, really don't care about the fight. And as much as, you know, people are talking about this fight, you know, being 50-50 and all that, that's a Ward that we remember from 3-4 years ago. Is that guy still there? And I think as far as Kovalev goes, he's talking about where was his prize. I think Ward was the prize that he was looking for. I think that the fact that he knew that what he wanted to do this year was he wanted to do Pascal, Stevenson, and then Ward. He knew Ward was the prize at the end. That's what he was going for. But he really wanted to unify and to beat somebody that he didn't like to get there, because I think it brings more prestige. Okay, here's the unified light heavyweight champion going against what people considered, you know, he was the lineal super middleweight champion. So it's a great selling point. But we know he's not going to get Stevenson, so he settles for Ward. Ward was the he was the prize, but I don't know if we're going to get that same fire from Kovalev. But what you might get is a, you know, something more, more methodical in his approach. But the thing with this is, where are they going to put this fight at? Is it going to be? Are they going to try to make it pay per view? I mean, because we know Ward's his fees are out of this world. I just don't see how that sells. I mean, people barely even want to watch him when he's off free TV on, even though it was BET. People don't even want to watch it there. So I don't understand how they're going to sell this fight, because Ward, even though sometimes he sounds like a good guy, he acts like a bad guy, he doesn't know exactly where he's at. He's a guy in limbo, even with his personality. And so in essence, the fans are in limbo with him. Like, well, I don't know whether I like him or I hate him, but I know sometimes he gets on my nerves, but I know he's skilled. So he just brings a lot of fight fans, and I think that's what you're going to see with trying to sell this fight.
You know what's crazy? What we think. Go ahead. What was that?
He was being difficult with the questions. You know, Ward. He's kind of a bad guy, kind of a good guy, kind of smiling. Kind of not vague, not really sure about what he's going to do in the division. You know, he keeps repeating, you know, I keep it simple. Like, what are you talking about? Did you make the fight? Want the fight? What's going on with you?
Right.
Why should I care? You know? I don't get Andre Ward. I mean, I've known him as long as I've been, as long as I was in LA and beyond, so almost 10 years. And, you know, off and on, I wouldn't say, you know, we don't get tea together or whatever, but I've just been observing him up close, and he's in the stratosphere. I don't understand where he is.
Yeah, even off camera, he's kind of difficult to talk to. He's kind of, you know, left to right. But here's something that I wanted to bring up. You know, in terms of like Amir Khan, when you think about his career and you think about the business move that he made before the Canelo fight, highly was very criticized, you know. But in that terms, I think Ward takes the cake. Every time he had his career at a momentum, at a peak of where he should be able to cross over, he really knew how to just kind of crap on his own career. It's kind of weird. He's not a Chris Oriel at self-destructive, but he's there in terms of self-destructing his own career. Because the fight with him and Kovalev right now should be the ones in talks. Fans should want to watch that because of the turnoff that he brings, like you were mentioning, Angelo. I think that's why he's not even really being mentioned or even cared about. It's HBO that are looking to kind of put him in that place, in that seat, that driver's seat with Kovalev. I just don't see fans right now kind of clamoring for this one. You know, I think if anything, more people are still even thinking and talking about Stevenson getting in the ring, because Stevenson's the one that's been avoiding Kovalev for some time.
Yeah, I kind of wonder, too, you know, you're talking about HBO pushing Andre Ward. I wonder if deep down they kind of hope that Kovalev knocks Ward out and ends all this, so they don't have to keep on pumping him up on every broadcast and every fight game that Jim Lampley does. You know, I just wonder if in the back they're like, oh, God, please just help us get past this part
of
our deal with
contract. Yeah.
Exactly.
Ken Hurstman's the one that fostered that career. Remember, HBO kind of flirted with Andre Ward when he turned pro, gets knocked down, has some shaky moments. They take him off TV, has a thumb injury, takes him off TV further, and he developed on Showtime, which created the super so that this was from a Showtime executive. It was integral in that process of putting it together. It was built to develop an American champion, an American brand. It was never for those Europeans that were involved. They just brought legitimacy. And that guy was Andre Ward that emerged. But that's Ken Hirschman's baby, brings him over, signs him at HBO when he moves over to HBO. And it's been, you know, something of a, I wouldn't say, a disaster. It definitely wasn't been a return on the investment of putting him ringside as a commentator, putting him in fights that, you know, aren't that memorable. No, it hasn't gone very well at all. And that scenario, I think they'd much rather be in the Kovalev business than in the Andre Ward business on some level. I just believe that.
Absolutely. I think so, too. Fight fans want to call in 347-215-7598. Let's patch in a fight fan right here on Leaving the Ring right now. Let's go with area code 702. You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring. What's on your mind? 702, you're on live right now. What's on your mind, brother?
Hey, I'm just listening, man.
Okay, brother. Thanks for tuning in, man. Yep. Hey, you know, really, really quick, because of this, because the big question is this now, too. Not only Kovalev is a very brass guy, he's proven that in the ring. He's kind of showed the coldness. But main events people are not very – they're very vocal. You know, they don't stay quiet. You know, you try to screw them over, they're going to come right at you. Now that we're seeing that Amir Khan is getting the Canelo fight, how close do we see the Stevenson fight? Or do you think HBO is going to still stick with the Ward fight? Because that is more beneficial for them, seeing that Stevenson is with Showtime here, Gabriel. What do you think, man? Do you think we're closer to seeing something like that? Or that's just too far-fetched because it's still with Stevenson, and he could sell out a whole crowd in Canada?
Well, you know, his numbers are okay. They're not super spectacular. And you look at his ratings last year, he was on two different platforms. Neither of them were Showtime. And the ratings were, I think they even were drop-offs from previous shows on those networks. So him saying that it needs to be a pay-per-view, it needs to be a joint pay-per-view, is a way of saying, you know, I don't want this fight. A lot of people blame main event, and it's everybody has this need for balance, for you got to call it on both sides. And you really look at the situation that Kathy Duva was in. He made that there was going to be a purse bid, and they decided to not take part of it, and they pulled out. And people said, oh, well, they were going to get their big fight, and they didn't want it. They're really not looking at the reality of the situation, is that Adonis Stevenson has not been developed as a product the way that Sergey Kovalev has, who's been developed on one network, then he moved to another, larger platform from, you know, the NBC shows to HBO. The process, he's been picking up belts, got a marquee win over Bernard Hopkins, and it has been fighting regularly. Stevenson has been fighting regularly, but, you know, not fighting the same level of opposition, not looking that great against lower-level opposition. You know, if he's getting wins, it's he's not fighting the same guys as Sergey Kovalev. So why would main events want to be in a situation where they cede all power to Al Haymon? And, you know, Yvonne Michel, I guess, is the promoter of record maybe with Adonis Stevenson. But let's, you know, we'll call a spade a spade. This is kind of like a little cabal of promoters behind the scenes all working with one guy who's bankrolling them. They could call it what it is, but really, it's a league. That's what the Premier Boxing Champion is. Why would Kathy Duva cede her project, her independent business, which is, you know, Sergey Kovalev's career, the control of that over to Al Haymon, who may or may not promote it well? I mean, they took a guy in Carl Frampton who was selling out, you know, decent-sized arenas or theaters
in the UK.
Brought him to Texas for God knows what reason. And you can see Frampton went right back and made the fight that he needed to, which was Scott Quigg. Like, he went back to the old way of promoting. Maybe that's the first guy. So I don't really play a lot of blame at main event's feet for this fight not happening. It made no sense for them to say, oh, we're going to get outbid by Deep Pockets and just put our guy at a disadvantage. That's not the way you build a business. It's not the way you protect investment. So
yeah.
I don't know if the fight's going to happen. It seems far away. But
it does.
You know,
seem far away. You know, I mean, the crazy thing is, like, you watch what the PBC do here. You had Guerrero and Garcia at the Staples, which made no sense to me because Guerrero is now the Southern California Mexican. He's a Northern California Mexican. At the HP Pavilion, that would have sold out. If you would even put it in Philadelphia, I think it would have sold out. Why don't they look into this? It's kind of baffling in how they do this business model, and then you sit back and go, how has he been this successful? I mean, obviously because of the dollar amounts that he's receiving, but, you know, I was told a while back, about a year ago, and, you know, there's different scenarios and different stories about what is in the Al Haymon business, you know, but I was told that is, you know, El Heyman is not looking to be sticking around for very long. He's looking to build a brand, and after that brand is built, he's not looking to build fighters. There's a difference. He's looking to build a brand, and after the brand has been built, on a certain period of time, he will turn over and sell that brand to whoever has the opening bid for that. And the more and more you look at it, the more and more you could see that seems to be the pathway that he's heading to. It becomes more believable. There, obviously, there's other things that are involved that we don't know about yet, and it's going to certainly be revealed, but more in the later stage of the ending of Al Heyman. I don't think PBC, but the Al Heyman era. I think he'll still be involved, but he's going to be involved in more of a distance than he is right now. Gabriel?
Well, you know, sorry, I got an old even in the ring habit. Somebody texted me with something while you're about setting up that question. Angela, once you field it, you know, I'll come from behind here.
Oh, yeah, no problem. Well, if he's trying to build a brand, job not well done. Because
yeah.
What he's built isn't anything like, you know, what people were saying he was modeling, kind of almost UFC style thing. He's more USFL than the UFC. You know, it's a second tier thing that he's built. And you know, even when let's go back a little bit to the Stevenson thing. You know, he's torn down that career because this guy was selling out, and this guy was selling a little bit of the arena, and now when Kovalev is in the ring, it's kind of the opposite of Rocky IV. You got the Russian in the ring, on the enemy's turf, and they're cheering him and they're booing their guys. It's the exact opposite thing, and I think that's one of the things that Dube is probably looking at too. Is they're going to want more money on the Stevenson side when it's like, I don't know if he's even selling tickets in Montreal. It seems like Kovalev is the guy that people are cheering for, who want to see win. And as far as Heyman goes, building the brand, he's doing the exact – everything seems to be exactly the opposite of what he should be doing. Like you were talking about Northern California to Southern California. You know, I tweeted it at Steve Kim, and I was telling him, you know, I'm curious at how they're getting these tickets out, because I looked 2 hours before the Guerrero-Garcia fight, and I could get four tickets together, 10 rows from the ring.
Right.
So I know they're not selling 12,000 tickets. How are they even handing these tickets out? And how are you building a brand when all you've built is fans who expect to go to every fight for free? Or a huge discounted ticket? I mean, I don't get it. I don't understand
right.
What you're building.
What's crazy is how is a manager that's been in the business, okay? Every manager, all these fighters have a manager, okay? How do they not sit there and realize, like, hey, I thought you were going to build a brand and build a fighter, you know, build a fighter into a megastar. I thought that was the deal, and I thought that was the plan. Why are you putting my fighter and setting them over here? We should be at this spot. It baffles me that there's nobody in that circle except for Amir Khan, unfortunately, that's, like, trying to do their own thing, trying to break away from that so-called mold that they've been trying to enforce. It just makes no sense. I mean, Abner Morris.
Well, it's kind of frustrating because, you know, I've had fighters tell me, you know, well, you know, it's free. So right off the bat, it's better. You know, I did an interview with Julius Williams, and he said that to me, you know, and I was like, well, they've had problems with the drug testing not being very uniform, and that'll all get worked out. Like, not to denigrate Julian at all, but it's like, you know, he's a prospect, and he's a student of the game, but, you know, there's a lot of people, it's indicative of a lot of people's attitudes that the rest of us don't really know what's going on. Everybody's an expert on business all of a sudden. I know I'm not. If I was a good businessman, I'd be a good businessman. But when you look at the way things have gone, I mean, Julian Williams in you know, a year's span went from telling me PBC is going to be great to complaining that he can't get a good fight because nobody else under that same banner will fight him. So is it a better system or is it not a better system? I know you guys are getting paid better, but that doesn't necessarily
right.
mean anything. It just means you guys are getting paid better. And the more I see it, it was interesting in that, I think it was in the Lance Pugmire article, where he was quoting an unnamed, you know, Tim Smith, in my opinion, I think I'm pretty sure it was Tim Smith. they talked about that. Like, this was the whole plan for this was not to improve boxing, which you and I have been talking about, Dave. The plan was to make sure that the fighters got the most money for their fights. And it's kind of a very political way he put it. And that's all they've accomplished. More dates, a diluted product.
We're
seeing
it down
a lot of developmental fights on TV. I mean, guys, one of the best knockouts last year, the PBC was between, you know, two guys that one of them you'll probably never see again, maybe even both. The product was just awful. It was kind of like club fights on major network TV. That made no sense to me. And the overpaying when the guys aren't doing the ratings, you're not getting any sponsorships. A guy I talked to that's close to the situation on the Premier Boxing Champion side said, like, where's the advertising? I thought people would start jumping on the bandwagon, but I don't think anybody's really knocking down their door for that. So, lawsuit aside, I'm just curious to see if the model will work. You know, if they're going to run out of cash first.
Thing. I mean, there's something. When you hear people going, well, these fighters are getting paid. You know, he's generous in that point. Is it really that generous? Because he's breaking the Ali Act. He's not only acting like an advisor, he's acting like a manager and a matchmaker. He's triple-dipping into these people's purses. He's making a lot of money, folks. It's not like he's being generous and just passing the buck. He's making money off that buck. That's why there's no big concern about building the fighter. There's no big concern of building the fighter in your hometown, building that certain brand. He's making his money. If you're making your money, what is the stress of longevity? There isn't.
Yeah, I think it's his biggest problem. You know, when you're talking about Julian Williams can't get a fight, I think that was one of the biggest things that the people who were all for the PBC was, well, it's one guy controlling it, so we're going to get the fights that we want to see. And yet he still can't get a fight. And as far as the payment, the pay that he's given these fighters, we said this on our show, was he's creating a whole bunch of first-round picks who are busts. You know, I think you guys, one of you guys at least, is Raider fans, right? I'm sorry to bring this up, but he's bringing up a lot of Jamarcus Russells. And what happens, they get paid. Okay, well, I don't have to work for it. Now I've already gotten the money that I wanted to get out of it, so I'm not going to put the work in. I'm not going to sacrifice. I'm not going to make the sacrifices. I'm not going to push myself. I'm not going to put myself in harm's way. And that's all. That's really what he's creating. It's only a very few fighters who have that will that I want to actually see if I'm the best fighter in my weight division. Those are the guys that are always having the problems getting the fight. Those are the guys who are going to have problems going forward, even in development, because he's going to be fighting nothing but club fighters for the rest of his career until he gets thrown in with a champion. And a lot of times when you make that kind of a jump, like a guy like Gary Russell did, you know, fighting nobody, goes in against Lomachenko and kind of gets schooled by the less inexperienced professional. And you're going to see that with a lot of these guys. I really don't understand, because he really is creating just a whole bunch of guys who lack desire. What's the desire for? The desire, you know, with a lot of these guys, they were coming from hard circumstances, and they're trying to better their lives and get for their family. And all of a sudden, well, they've got what they wanted in the end.
I think
justify the means. You know, like you work your butt off to get to a certain position. Well, these guys really aren't doing that, and that's what he's creating.
Well, I think it's fair to say that he's breeding. I think it's fair to say that he's breeding a.
Well, and it's that, but it's also kind of the entitled fighter, and it's a diluted product, and it's a fighter that doesn't quite understand. It's that guy that doesn't get that the first fight, 10 fights, are for you, maybe even 15, you know, and then you start to get into tougher fights after 15 or somewhere around 10. You get one tough fight, and they kind of taper back, and then you move forward. These guys are getting title shots way too soon, getting champion money way too soon, and it's a delicate thing. What's the ratio of how much money do you give somebody before they lose their desire to get better in their craft? And I think that's in any artistic field, any field, you're going to get that guy that makes a lot of money that stays right there. You're going to get that guy that shoots for the stars, you know. But I didn't quite clearly make the point on my next round the other day. What drives me crazy about the Al Haymonites is the people that say, you know, we should just trust him because he's rich. He's made a lot of money. It's kind of like the people that want to vote for Donald Trump because he's made a lot of money. But you look at it, and it's like you look at Hollywood and you say, I want one person to just take it over. Who would you pick? Would you pick Steven Spielberg, who's made some all-time classics and great films of varying genres while also being very successful and making a ton of money and altering the industry? Or would you give it to Michael Bay, who's made a lot of high-level crap, made a lot of money, but none of his movies would ever be considered art, and they're just total garbage that you probably wouldn't really rewatch all the way through ever again? And that's Al Heyman to me. Makes a lot of money. He makes a big, bright, shiny project or a product, but ultimately it doesn't have a lot of depth, and you're not going to go back and rewatch a lot of those fights. As much as people try to sell you Aaron Martinez versus Robert Guerrero as a classic, it isn't. Neither was Thurman Guerrero. So, and these guys, there's, like you're saying, there is no depth there. They're not learning. They're not being challenged at the right time with the right guy, because you've got a mishmash of different matchmakers. He's got a lot of dates to fill. There's maybe a unified vision of getting paid, but there isn't a unified vision on all the other facets.
No, if you're trying to push a certain matchup, okay, and you're not able even to give it the direction in terms of marketing it right so that fans kind of salivate about it. For instance, you know, people would love to see a rematch between Edna Morris and Santa Cruz, okay? Santa Cruz is getting Martinez. Edna Morris is getting Fernando Montiel. How do you get that fight and then justify it that, oh, well, Adam Morris looks better. He looks strong and determined. We now need to see that rematch. It doesn't help anything at all. It doesn't even help Adam Morris look. You know what I'm saying? It's such a crappy way to try to set up another fight.
They expended their outrage yesterday.
Exactly. You know, when I saw that, I was just like, are you serious? I mean, here's the case of even two with Porter and Thurman, okay? At one moment, at one time, I was excited about it, but it got drawn out so long about it. It's an okay fight, you know, but at the same time, it isn't that great. I mean, you really think about the style. It's not that – I'm not too enthused about it, you know? And I think just the way Heyman has kind of – you know, rolled out the carpet for these certain types of fights. He just doesn't know how to do it correctly.
Yeah, with the Thurman Porter fight, I mean, that one, I don't know, Steve talked about that the style matchup may not give us a great fight, but at least we're getting two guys who are in the prime of their career, the physical prime, and that's something that we really haven't got on the PBC side. So I'm not going to complain about that. And I think a lot of people who are down on it, a lot of it has to do because, you know, I don't like what Heyman's doing and I don't like the PBC. And I separate myself from that. You know what? If the fight's good and it's one of the, it's got to be one of the three, four best matchups you can make at the welterweight division right now. it really is.
Look, right. Almost over a year in with Al Heyman, and we only get three. That's pretty crap together. And we have to be satisfied. The draw out of what he does is that you end up becoming accepting to what he ends up dishing out for you. I just don't buy that. You know, I mean, on paper it looks good, but if I play it in my head, I don't see a great outstanding fight that's supposed to happen. I see a fight that should have happened a while back and would have kind of registered where these two guys are at welterweights, make them a bigger stance of why they should be getting bigger and you know, bigger fights and a bigger platform. Right now, I don't know, when they fight, where do we go from there after they fight?
It's a classic Al Heyman matchup in that I think it's a very good fight, but these guys haven't fought in a long time. By the time they get in the ring, they'll have like some of the longer layoffs of their careers. I have no idea why that happened. They weren't seriously injured in their last fights. They didn't need to take all that time off. And then it's at the Mohegan Sun, and you go, well, why the hell is it there? You have two guys that are from nowhere near there fighting there against each other at a hard-to-get-to casino in a region that may not be economically the most sound. Why is it happening there? And you go, right. Well, where would you put it? Those are two Al Heyman fighters that have been developed by Al. There is no region to take them where they sell because no one has built that product. It's always been about making some money off of the fighters, getting the best financial deal, regardless of the future. It's classic Al Haymon. I agree with you, Angelo. I think it's going to be a good fight.
Yeah, and this is the way I do. I look at fights like this from on the PBC side in two ways, from two different angles. Like, if you look at the Mahrez-Santa Cruz fight, that was probably the best PBC card, the matchup and then where they put it was perfect. This fight, not so much. But the matchup, I just look at it, okay, the matchup's good. I like the matchup, so I'm not going to criticize that. What criticism will come after that was, where will this fight lead to? Because a lot of times these fights lead to nowhere. You know, that was the thing with the Santa Cruz Mahrez fight was like, okay, now you've reestablished Santa Cruz's name. You've got some of the haters off of him. So what are you going to do now? Well, now you're going to go right back to what you've been doing. So now let the complaints commence again. And that's exactly what you're going to get with this one is the matchup's good. It's two guys in their prime. But after this, now what? You know, and Haymon has never really capitalized on any fight leading to something next. And that's why I look at it. I'm going to enjoy the fight for what it is. And then when I see that it's not going to lead to anything better after this, then I'm going to be back on to complaining about how he's doing his business.
I mean, a large part of Floyd's, you know, that's Al's greatest achievement, Floyd's platform for I'm the best ever and I'm undefeated, is the amount of money that he's made. Because if he didn't, if he was like a Svenotsky-level guy, that kind of money, or even just a little bit above, that's what he'd be considered. I mean, I still consider him a guy that just fought very safe through the back end of his career post-Jose Luis Castillo. But he made a ton of money, and so everybody says he's great. And that's what everybody else is trying to do, is make a ton of money and then call themselves great. I think that's the career path of all, you know, and the junior, you know, Chase Manhattan, you know, executives that are Al Haymonites will say, well, it's not about, you know, the manager's supposed to get him the most money. But this game is about making money, but it's also about a legacy. It's also about going for greatness. And I don't see the room for that in his careers. I've always said that. There's no free will within those careers. And you look at Amir Khan stalling. You look at Porter and Thurman stalling. Even Errol Spence, who for a minute it seemed like he was going to get a Thurman fight, then they announced a tournament that he's not even in his weight class.
Right.
Very strange stuff.
Yep. Very, very, very strange stuff.
I think Gabe brought up a good point with the money, too. If it wasn't for the money, then he wouldn't have so many people on Floyd's side, even though Floyd is a great fighter. I mean, you can't argue that. He's not as great as he says, and he's not as bad as the haters say. He's somewhere in the middle, which makes him what?
My argument is that we will never know because there's a lot of prime fights that he avoided. So,
absolutely. Kashizu, there's Paul Williams, there's Margarito,
there's
Sotomayor, exactly. There's Sugar Shane at 35. But
there's Duda, he had lost, you know, maybe it's a little bit sooner. I mean, that's a tough one. But Margarito's a big one.
Yeah,
Paul Williams is a big one.
The Zab one, you got to put that on Zab for losing to Baldemir. So, you know.
But you got to put it on Floyd for taking it after he lost and then call it
a exactly.
title fight.
Yeah, that
you
too.
Know?
But the part I was agreeing with you on, Gabe, was the money because, you know, the undefeated record is one thing and the money, that's
mm-hmm.
what. Because
mm-hmm.
nobody says, man, Joe Calzaghe, greatest ever.
Right. That's exactly right. Svenotsky, greatest ever. Same record.
Nobody even says
Finito, greatest ever.
Finito Lopez, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah,
nobody says those things.
Marciano's not even the greatest heavyweight. That's, you know,
exactly.
You know, but...
pick and choose type of skills, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there's no. I just, you know, the path to greatness is blocked in there. That's why I think Amir should be applauded. And even Canelo on some level, he's taking a fight that's not win-win. You know, it's a tough thing. If he blows the guy out, everybody's expected it. If he struggles in a great fight, people are going to criticize him because he's not that great. It's an interesting fight on that level.
Well, I think it's more of a major backlash for because if you blow out, well, you blew out a guy that was on, had no business being in your weight class. If you go 12 rounds, dude, you're not that good, which has been saying. He has more risk taking this fight and chucks away with a win-win here. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this was just looking at the fight from the, you know, as soon as it was called, you're like, oh, well, this is a lose-lose for Canelo. There's nothing that can be gained at all. I mean, he can only lose in this fight, no matter if he loses or not. He could look good, and he'll still lose. Great, you knocked out Amir Khan. Great, so did Brady's Prescott. So, I mean, what does that prove? And then he extends you.
Right.
He extends you, and then you're like, then how do we even think that a fight with Triple G is going to be somewhat competitive?
Well, the only outcome that he can have that's better than anybody else against Amir Khan is to put him out cold. You know, because
yeah. Prescott,
he was really hurt against Prescott. He's about as hurt as you can be without being unconscious. But it's one of those things, you get caught early in your career, then he moves pretty soon out of the weight class. You can blame it on that. It happened. Danny Garcia, he did get stopped on his feet, and he was arguing about it when it happened. I think it was a good stoppage, but still. You know, the fighters, I made the mistake early on in my writing career of calling a TKO a knockout, and was berated by the fight camp for it, and rightly so. It does matter. So the best thing Canelo can do here is to knock Amir Khan clean out and do it in a dominating, impressive fashion, showing that, you know, he learned from the Trout and Lara fights. You know, they're you know, opposite fighters in terms of their stance. They're speedy guys who are going to move around. He can show that he can trap Khan, negate the speed with a good jab, and knock him out cold, and do it not in like a lucky fashion, but in a methodical, brutal fashion. That might say something. I mean, he'd still beat a smaller guy, but hey, you know, Bernard Hopkins' best wins are against Oscar De La Hoya and Felix Trinidad, two smaller guys. So
Right. But he had his career based on fighting middleweights before he, you know, went on that trail and stuff. I wonder with the back deal with Amir Khan and Golden Boy, even if he loses, I know there's a clause of rematch, but at the same time, what are the promises that were made by him, by Golden Boy? Because Golden Boy, definitely, the lesson learned when working with Al Haymon is how to be a little crude and how to set up some side deals. So you just don't bring on another guy from another camp that's not happy with their former promotional group. To me, it's a perfect moment to seize attack when you got a guy that's not happy, and you start kind of bringing out the promises of purses to them. It's really interesting what Golden Boy is now. You know, at one time, like I said, most people were going to last another year. You know, that they were going broke, et cetera. But just looking at the layout now, the landscape of what's going on in boxing, every year it seems to get more interesting in terms of the promoter's position, not the fighter's position. Positions here. I want to thank Angelo for coming on here on Leaving the Ring. You guys got to check out his podcast. It's a Cheap Seats Boxing Podcast. You guys can catch him. And it's every Tuesday night?
We kind of mix it up. We just, you know, it's usually whenever me and JP can get together and do it, man. We try to get it on by Wednesday, man. You know, but you guys understand how hard it is sometimes. But, yeah, just everybody check us out, man, Cheap Seats Boxing. And every week we're on there, me and JP. And we just have fun, man. You know, we don't take ourselves too seriously. We just like to talk boxing and just, you know, pretty much what you heard here is what you're going to hear from me is what you're going to hear on our show. And I want to thank you, Dave, for reaching out, and Gabe for letting me crash your guys' party. I really do appreciate you guys having me on,
That's
man.
That's good stuff. That's good.
Absolutely,
I appreciate it, man.
Bro.
I would love to do it again sometime, you know, and you know, maybe one of these times, man, we can get one of you guys on the show, man, on our show. And I really, like I said, I just really appreciate you guys having me on, man.
Sure, man. Anytime. Yeah,
absolutely, bro.
It's really good stuff. And Dave and I decided to kind of mix it up this year. Dave's got a definite vision for how he wants the year to go, and it's just cool to have different perspectives, different people on, and it kind of forces Dave and I to think in new ways. So that's kind of good. You know, it's very good. So thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate you guys, man. Dave, I'll be talking to you, bro.
All right, brother. Thanks for tuning in. Now for coming on, man. Really appreciate it. Anyways, guys, you can catch Angelo on this podcast. If you haven't checked it out, you got to check definitely take tune in and listen to it, man. It's really good. I enjoy it. And I'm listening to another podcast, so people there out there asking if, hey, have you checked out my show, blah, blah, blah. Trust me, I'm listening to a variety of different ones, and I'm definitely going to be reaching out to a variety of different podcasters to come on and host with us here on The Even Ring. You know, it's our way of saying thank you for supporting the show. I know I was on a long, long vacation for a whole year, but now I'm back in full effect, and I'm enjoying myself. I got the spark again, the fire in my eyes, or whatever you can call it, to be on live here on The Even Ring. So, everybody that tunes in, I thank you. And we're going to have the debut of Full Court Press. It's an all-NBA podcast. Two guys, you got Biko and Fresh. These two guys are doing a podcast for the NBA Network. They're part of our network now. And it's going to be sold by the NBA. You got to take a tune in. If you're a basketball fan, tune in. They also talk about NFL as well. You know, these are two NFL and NBA heads and stuff. And they're very knowledgeable guys and funny as hell. I think you guys are going to enjoy it. I think it's a great new addition to The Ring. It's something different. I said that this year we're going to start bringing on different podcasts to the show. So take a listen. Give us the criticism. Give us the praise. What you think about the new Full Court Press show here on The Ring Network. And don't forget, be safe on the weekends. Don't drink and drive because you will spill your beer.